Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is an Our Paranormal Afterlife remastered episode, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. I've recently gone back and listened to some of the older episodes, and I was reminded just how much valuable, relevant insight they still offer. So I'm going to be re-releasing one episode each week, now with updated and remastered audio for a much better listening experience. In this episode, I'm talking to Robin Foy. Robin was one of the team who took part in the Skoll experiment, looking into physical mediumship. Hi, Robin. Thank you very much for coming onto the podcast. We're going to be talking about the Skoll experiment and physical mediumship. But first of all, could you tell us what the Skoll experiment was?
Yes, my wife and I had been involved in spiritual, in physical mediumship for 45 years now. And at the time that Skoll started, we had basically been involved for about 20 years. What we had learnt from the physical mediumship we'd encountered was mainly to do with the traditional way of working, which is the usage of ectoplasm, which is a substance that builds up within the body of a medium. Usually that medium goes into deep trance and sits in a cabinet, and the ectoplasm becomes a solid substance, which can take the form of spirit people, which is sort of materialization. When spirit started working with us at Skoll, after we'd been in this for 20 years and had quite a lot of experience of the other way of working, then they explained to us with what they were doing at Skoll was working in a totally different way. They were working in an energy-based way, and that is to say what they were doing was actually combining three energies. The first of these energies was a spiritual energy, which the spirit team brought with them when they came from the spirit world for our sittings. The second was a spiritual energy which they gained from us, the sitters. We sort of lent it to them during the course of a sitting. And the third part of the mix was a natural earth energy, which occurs in certain geographical places in the world in a natural way. And it's actually a column or spiral of energy. But if you're working with physical mediumship in the area of one of these columns, you can actually attract it to you. So that these three types of energy were mixed together in a glass dome, which sat on a central table during our sessions. And that creation of with three different types of energy was what they called a creative energy. And this means that they were able to draw on that energy to produce physical phenomena. And when we had spirit people come into our room, it was totally different from the way it had been done before with a cabinet and with ectoplasm. And a spirit person literally was teleported, lock, stock and barrel, completely as they are in the spirit world, into the room. And through a mental process, which they had to learn and had to practice, they were able to draw this creative energy into their into their spiritual essence, which, if you like, you call that the soul or call that the spiritual personality. And through that, they were able to make themselves very much solid, and they were able to become, they increased the density by adding this energy mix, and were able to become totally solid. And that happened over a 5-year period, and we had it happen on many, many occasions when we had sittings. I mean, in all the sittings that took place over 5 years, from 1993 to 1998, were at least 1,000 hours long in total. So we had a very, very large experience of working with energy. And during that time, our spirit team was able to explain to us how they worked with this energy. And they literally dictated for us a basic guide, which we've since been able to pass on to other people. and which has resulted in many other groups being able to get physical mediumship, physical phenomena, in the energy-based way.
I could just go back a little bit there. When you said that they were able to actually exist physically, did you have light in the room? Could you see them? Or how would you know that it was a physical manifestation?
Well, some of the early phenomena that we got at Skoll was spirit lights. And the spirit team actually were able to extend this so that eventually they were able to produce sheets of spirit light, which could be present when a spirit person was there. So on many occasions, we did have the opportunity to actually witness a spirit person. And very often, when they didn't materialize, when they were teleported into the room, they would actually put a spirit light on their hand just to show their hand. An arm was completely solid as they moved around the room. And also, very often, they would hold it under their chin so you could completely see their face in good light.
Did you ever feel scared when this was going on? It does sound a bit creepy.
Well, we'd been involved in this for 20 years before Skoll started. So we'd had a lot of experiences of being touched and mingling with spirit people in the same room. So no, it never felt creepy. All you could feel in the room, the feeling in the room was a feeling of love. And that was a definite feeling. And it was almost like a wall that hit you. It was a solid thing. And all of the phenomena which we were involved in and which we've always been involved in is basically, it's run by love. So love is the core of the whole thing.
And it must have been quite exciting when these things started to happen.
Well, it really was. You know, I mean, we were literally gobsmacked on occasions because some of the phenomena that we witnessed there had never really been done or seen before. That we were aware of.
And so who was in the Skoll group?
We started out with seven sitters. There was one person who was a local lady that ran a marine business down in Cardiff. And she had to be away sort of one week in the month. We had two people that travelled 70-odd miles every week from Stansted. They lived there they attended each week. Then we had two other people who we recruited locally who turned out to be the most fantastic deep trance mediums. And it was through their deep trance mediumship, during the whole 1,000 hours of phenomena, they were out like a light all the time. But we were able to converse with spirit people through them. So we learned who our spirit team were we got to know them quite intimately. In fact, in the end, our spirit team and the people that spoke to us were like family. And when it stopped very, very suddenly, exactly 20 years ago last month, it was rather like losing the whole of our family in one go. But it was quite amazing that we were able to get instructions and help and sort of be given advice about the circle through these two trance mediums.
And so can you describe for us the environment where the experiments were carried out?
Yeah, it was a cellar underneath a very, very old farmhouse that had been built around about 1600, 66 years before the fire of London. And it was very, very close to the Skoll Inn, which we're absolutely certain originally there had been a secret passage between one a further cellar, which had been bricked up since then, but which still existed below ground, and the Skoll Inn. Literally is no more than sort of 25 feet away from the Skoll Inn. It was a very, very old house. But when we arrived there, we'd been told some time before that energies were being put into that house, especially for the work that would take place there. And in fact, that's exactly how it felt. There was a feeling of love in the house. It was, you know, we could feel the psychic energy. My wife, Sandra, is more psychic than I am. And she was able to feel it. We loved living in that place. We lived there for 15 years totally, until we eventually sort of finished the Skoll experiment, finished, as I say, 20 years ago. And then in 2006, 8 years after Skoll finished, we packed up and moved to Spain, and we've been here 12 years now.
So can you tell us about the Spirit team and how they operated? Was it kind of like there's a team on our side and a team on their side?
Well, there was more than just communication. I mean, the Spirit team, we were told, probably consisted when we were at Skoll of about 200 Spirit people, all working together in unison. But there were little departments within that Spirit team, where one sort of department would be working on spirit lights, another department would be working on psychic photographs, another department would be working on teleportation of spirits, another department would be working on direct voice, which came from midair. And we had lots and lots of different experiments, and you had a little department sort of working on each, although we never really knew a lot of the people who were involved in these different departments. We had probably at the very most a regular number of about 10 communicators who spoke to us on a regular basis, and they were able to sort of pass on messages from others and advice from others within the Spirit teams. Now, with the work we do today, we're now told that we have about 500 people within the Spirit team we're working with. But of course, we're busy developing phenomena again to be able to demonstrate it in the new centre, which we're going to open down in Antequera in Spain.
There were other people that came in as kind of scrutineers who I suppose were checking to make sure it all wasn't just trickery and hoaxing. Can you tell us about those people?
I mean, we actually, in conjunction with the Spirit team, because we always did what they asked, and they always sort of said yes or no to certain visitors. We had four scientists who were prominent members of the SPR, the Society for Psychical Research, in London, and they sat with us regularly over a two-year period. And they were totally convinced in that 2 years that it was genuine, because they saw some quite remarkable phenomena, so much so that they actually wrote a book. Well, it was a book in the end, but it was called Part of the Proceedings of the SPR, which was called the Skoll, I think it's called the Skoll Review or the Skoll Report. And that was actually published by the SPR in very much a sort of, very much a sort of positive vein, which was unusual for them, because most of the members of the SPR were very, very sceptical and not very friendly towards physical mediumship and its phenomena.
Physical mediumship was something that was quite popular around 100 years ago or so, wasn't it? And it seemed to have died out over time.
Yeah, well, it certainly did. I mean, by 1990, physical mediumship had almost died out totally. And in 1990, we actually created an organisation, which we were asked to create by Spirit, called the Noah's Ark Society. And the Noah's Ark Society was there first and foremost to save physical mediumship, because most of the physical mediums that were around at that time were dying off. They're very elderly people. We needed to sort of get some younger people developing that type of mediumship. So we started the Noah's Ark Society, and members of that society were able to see demonstrations of physical mediumship by new physical mediums, people that hadn't been heard of before, such as Stuart Alexander and Colin Fry. Colin Fry developed his mediumship in round about a year and a half, which again is very unusual, because physical mediumship, generally speaking, in the traditional way with ectoplasm, took anything from 10 to 15 years to develop. Colin developed rapidly and was able to do demonstrations for the Noah's Ark Society. Through the Noah's Ark Society, we interested people all over the world in physical mediumship again. And in the 4 years that we belonged to it, well, 4 years that we ran it, really, I was the chairman of the society from its start, right up to 1994. We came out in 1994 because Skoal was beginning to get very, very serious at that time. And our spirit team wanted us to sort of move away from the Noah's Ark Society. And at that time, we formed the New Spiritual Science Foundation on the request of spirit. Again, we spread interest in all the phenomena that was going on at Skoal, the things that were happening there. And we got a lot of communications coming through at Skoal, which were quite amazing. So much so that there is at the moment, currently, a possibility of a big screen film on Skoal that is doing the rounds of Hollywood at the moment.
I wanted to talk to you about the amazing images that came on the photographic film. Could you tell us how that started?
Yeah. Well, it started out, we talked with it amongst ourselves about the possibility of getting some film of psychic things. And to begin with, with the cooperation of spirit, they said to us, in the dark, roll out a film on a board, roll it back up again before we finish the sitting and see if anything is on there. Well, that never really took off. There were one or two very, very small things happened on there. And then the spirit team got very interested in this. And they said to us, well, okay, we'll allow you to sort of put one camera loaded with 35 millimeter film in the room and see what happens. So 1 week we put a camera in there loaded with 35 millimeter film. And as we were loading it with the film, we sort of took a test picture outside the house, which is just as well as we did in the end, because we wouldn't have recognized the film afterwards when it was developed by one of the local laboratories. But what happened was that during the sitting, my wife, Sandra, was asked to pick up the camera and point it into the darkness. And whenever spirit said now, press the button and take a photo. Well, this is in total darkness, so there shouldn't have been anything on. But when those images were developed, they were 11 separate images on that film of all sorts of things all over the place, including people, places, all over the world, Singer signs for Singer sewing machines, you name it, and it was all there. And there was even one that came out in color, which it shouldn't have been, of the spire of Notre Dame in Paris, looking down the river. That obviously we were chuffed to death when we got that. And then the very next time, two more sitters said, oh, we've got to bring one in now. So they also loaded a 35 millimeter camera, an ordinary SLR camera with 35 millimeter film, the same as ours. And at that sitting, both cameras were used. One of them levitated by itself and moved all around the room, just clicking by itself and taking pictures by itself. Each of those films, when they were developed, had 11 different frames on them, all of which had the most amazing stuff. Portraits of people, portraits of places. We even had from time to time a signature that could be verified. Ivan Avello was one of them. We had a picture of his signature, which we could be verified because we managed to get hold of a piece of sheet music that had been signed by him, and the signature on the film was virtually identical. So there were just so many things there. And then the spirit team developed it because they wanted to do more experiments with photography. Eventually they said to us, look, we don't want a camera anymore. All we want you to do now is to put out a 35 millimeter film that's never actually been taken out of its box, so it's never actually been in light anywhere, just leave it on the table while we do our work, and then after the sitting, develop it, we'll see what happens. And by this time, we'd had a meeting with the people at the instant camera place. Can't remember the name of the instant cameras. But they had supplied us with film, and they'd also supplied us with a little machine that would allow us to develop the film immediately we'd taken it out of the sitting. And then they started to bring all sorts of things onto these films, which were on the table. And eventually, they were able to influence a film that was still tightly rolled in its original package, so that the whole of the 4 feet or so of that film was covered with different images. And, you know, it became quite a fantastic thing. And eventually, somebody bought us a video camera, and we were able to do an experiment with working with Spirit and with two mirrors, which was called Project Alice, lining up the video camera so that the mirrors, the camera was facing into the mirrors, which was facing into the viewer at the back, and another mirror, and it became a complete circuit. And we started to get some really fantastic video films that way. So we were getting some really good photographic stuff, and much of it was able to be evidentially checked against signatures, etc.
These photographs are online as well. A lot of them can be seen. Is it the Skoll Experiment website?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that's not my website. The Skoll Experiment is actually the two mediums run that site, with the two people that wrote the book, The Skoll Experiment, although they never sat with us. But they are the people, and Grant and Jane Solomon, who have written the screenplay for the big screen film, which is doing the rounds at the moment.
You also went further with the film, and you would lock it in a wooden box and one of the scrutineers would hold on to it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's quite correct. At the end, I mean, you know, sort of, there was no way that anybody could have got into that box or got at it whilst they were holding it. We got some really amazing stuff there that way.
Now, some of the video images are quite amazing, and I think you can see some of those on YouTube as well.
Yes,
can you tell us about the landscapes and the images that were on video?
Well, some of the landscapes were supposedly of the spirit world. You may have noticed one of them actually shows pyramids, which were supposedly in the spirit world. And there's another one there that actually shows another planet that we obtained in that way. Towards the end of the Skoll experiment, we were actually getting on the film pictures of ETs that put themselves onto the film. And when you played the film back, you could see these different formats of ETs. Plus, of course, we actually had one ET that was teleported into the room and stood there with us on a number of occasions, picking up our hands, putting them onto his head so we could feel he wasn't totally human. The love that came from that little guy was quite fantastic. I mean, he was only just about 4.5 feet tall, and his eyes were totally different. But if you can imagine the pictures of a grey that are around, he left his picture on the film as Blue. So we always called him Blue. That was his nickname. And he was standing there and allowing us to sort of feel him all over. I mean, he was quite animated, and on the film he was animated. And we had other ETs that appeared on there. Not all the films we got have actually been made public, purely and simply because some of them have faded almost immediately after we took them out of the room. But also there's one or two there that we're sort of holding back for sort of students of the future, who are really serious students of the psychic research.
Are there many members of the spirit team that are actually entities that have never been alive on Earth?
So several of them, yes. We met whilst we were at Skoll, and not only that, but there was a device that was actually brought to our attention by the scientist now, who's the guy that Edison, Thomas Edison, on a film, he actually produced a blueprint of a little device there, told us exactly how to build it, what to put in it, and put on this film, this blueprint will help you produce this and help it to work properly. We were actually able to talk to people from other dimensions and other worlds. And the very first person, when we got this working, it took us over a year to really, when we'd built it, of course, a year to really get it going. But this TDC machine, the very first time we heard someone on there, it was a speech by Edison himself. And of course, the film that we got that showed this blueprint was signed with his initials, Edison's initials. And it wasn't until after the guys from the SBR had got in touch with the Edison Institute in America and managed to get from them a copy of a memo that he'd signed with his initials in 1926, that we were able to definitely say that the initial signature we had on the film and the initial signature which was on the memo that he'd written in 1926 were identical. You know, there was more and more of this, but he spoke to us for 15 minutes, Edison himself. And after that, able to contact different places in space and people who had never had an Earth life.
It took some time to get it working properly, didn't it?
It really did. I mean, it was over a year before we really got it working properly. But when it did, I mean, it was very clear you know, we had the greatest conversations sometimes with these people.
Well, that was the germanium device, is that right?
That's absolutely right, yes, yeah. It's a very, very small. It's no bigger really than a large matchbox.
And do you have any recordings of these?
Every single thing that came through that device and every single word that was spoken during our sittings was recorded. And those recordings do exist. At the moment, we're having them digitized.
Will people be able to hear them eventually?
When we get the center open and when we've got sort of very serious researchers there, most certainly they will.
That'd be excellent. Would they be online?
Possibly not initially. But eventually they may well be.
A lot of the images on the films are sort of diagrams, and you got different languages written, and you got a couple of poems as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of those poems came from Wordsworth. This was one that provided a lot of evidence for those four SPR guys that came and sat with us.
But some of the communication just seem a little peculiar. Why do you think that they did it like that and not maybe just give you descriptions of the afterlife?
Purely and simply because they wanted to bring evidence. They wanted to make people. So you have to remember that previously, prior to our work at Skull, nobody had really done anything that anyone could ever remember working with energy. And our spirit team have told us since then that, in fact, energy work happened thousands and thousands of years ago on a natural basis, but they're only just now bringing it back again.
What about the physical items that appear? Did you call them apports?
Yeah, apports. Most certainly. I mean, we had quite a few in total, about 100. But that's absolutely nothing when you compare it to some of the apports that today's physical mediums are getting. Our vice president of the Spiritual Science Foundation is actually a German physical medium called Kai Muger. And Kai now is getting anything up to 40 or more apports, which come from his ears, from his mouth, from his nose, from his hands, in front of sitters in the light, every time he sits. So very often you'll find, if you look on Facebook and look for the Felix Circle, and connect with Kai in that way there, you will find that there's always photographs of these apports being published, and some of them are really massive stones and that come sometimes from his mouth. And I mean, it would be impossible for a stone that size to come out of a human's mouth, but they do with Kai. And Carol is probably the last and the best of the demonstrating physical mediums who works with ectoplasm. He gets full form materialization when he sits in the light. People are able to see them, the materializations that come with ectoplasm.
And what do the materializations look like? Do they look like people? Do you see faces or is it other things?
Materializations are that. When you're working with ectoplasm, you would see faces they're usually, the body itself is usually covered with a sort of ectoplasmic robe. But you'd see the faces, and including, you know, beards and various other things that go with that.
You're describing such amazing things. Why is it, do you think, that there isn't greater interest in society or in the media in looking into this?
Well, there is now. I think we've helped to actually make these things more and more interesting for the general public. And I'm hearing every week of new people who are developing phenomena. So, we have two very good friends who are members of the foundation, Uwe and Beata Seeger. They live in Germany as well. Uwe has developed physical mediumship, working with energy, within about 18 months. They stayed over here a couple of weeks ago. In fact, we went down to Anticara with them while they were here. And we had some trial sittings with them, the first time we'd really sat with him properly. And Uwe has teleported spirit people there, quite solid, walking around the room, doing various things, talking to you, sort of tugging your trouser legs and various other touches. But in the very last sitting we had with them, and for the very first time, they had independent voice. So they had a voice come from midair. So that's an extra thing he's now developed. And that's a very, 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 very evidential way of getting messages across. When a voice can speak to you from midair, literally the voice of the person before they died, who can speak to you and be identified by that voice.
Are there physical mediums that you would recommend for people to go and see around the world?
There are some. And these are increasing on a constant basis. I mean, I would always recommend people, if they're able, to sort of sit with Kai Mooger. Our new chairman, we're putting a new chairman in there from this month, actually, who is Brian Russell. He lives in the UK, in Norfolk. And Brian is a physical medium, gets some very good stuff. And his mediumship is getting better and better. Uwe and Beata in Germany. Well worthwhile sitting with, and they do allow visitors from time to time. I don't think Brian's allowing the public in yet, but we also get phenomena here, and this is getting sort of better as we develop it further. And Spirit have told us that by the time we get the centre and get it open, we will also be able to do public demonstrations of phenomena here, or not here, but in Anticara. We have been getting, from last Christmas, we have been getting spirit lights, dramatic spirit lights, probably anything up to about 50 in any sitting. Plus now we're beginning to get teleported spirit visitors again. It's all coming together and the development's working out. So it's all going back of new people that are getting new phenomena. So most definitely it's taken off, and now is the age of new physical mediumship. Most of the physical mediums today are working with energy because it's quicker for them to develop that. Traditionally, ectoplasmic mediumship could take anything up to 15, 20 years to develop, and it was also very dangerous for the medium. Inevitably, with physical mediumship done with ectoplasm, there's one medium who goes into a deep trance and usually sits in a cabinet, which is a little bit like a sort of Punch and Judy setup, with curtains at the front that can be opened whenever necessary. But we don't actually sit with a cabinet at all with energy. We're getting, and we never did at Skull. All of our phenomena to cabinet, we had two mediums in deep trance, but the stuff that we're getting now nobody's actually in deep trance, and we're still getting the phenomena.
And why would a medium sit in a cabinet?
Well, purely and simply because if either they choose or if their spirit team chooses to work with ectoplasm, then it's necessary for their mediumship.
And also, is it always in darkness, or is it more nowadays that there's
well,
light?
Nowadays you're getting more and more light. I mean, if you sit with Kai Muga, for instance, you would be able to see materializations that he has, the ectoplasmic materializations, in light. They have a red light, I think, on when this is happening. And, you know, you can sort of see exactly what's happening. And also, very often, when he's giving apports out left, right, and center, you're able to see the process totally.
So can you tell me what is the most amazing thing that you've seen or experienced?
I mean, I've seen and experienced so much, to be absolutely honest. I think probably one of the most amazing things I've seen, and it doesn't sound quite such a big thing, was an experiment that our spirit team did for the four scientists. They wanted to prove to them that everything we were doing at Skoll was genuine. And so they set up an experiment, and basically what happened is that a lot of the items that we had on the table in Skoll had a spirit light inside them. They were sort of lit by themselves. And on another occasion, I mean, for instance, we saw self-illuminated angels come into being in front of us and sort of move around the room, trailing their robes over us. And that was fantastic. But this experiment with a crystal was quite amazing. We had a cooking bowl on there, a Pyrex cooking bowl, and the spirit world actually would very often illuminate that and use it like a little lamp in many ways. And on this occasion, they self-illuminated a large crystal and placed it themselves in this bowl, which was in front of all of us, and the four of them sitting around the table with us. This crystal stayed illuminated throughout the whole of this experiment. And they asked each and every one of the scientists to pick up this crystal, which they all did. And they picked it up and verified, yes, it's got weight. It's quite normal. There's nothing different about it. And then they were asked to put it back into the bowl, which they did. It stayed self-illuminated. It never left the sight of any of us. A few seconds later, the scientists were asked to pick up the crystal again, and it was still there, still in front of us. And when they tried to pick up the crystal, their hands simply went through it. So, you know, it just wasn't there, although you could still see it. And it was, we were told, you know, sort of that this, what they'd done is actually taken the spiritual essence of that crystal and left it there, but they'd extracted the molecules and atoms which normally reside within such a crystal. The third time that they asked the scientists to pick it up, which they did a few seconds later, of course it was back again, and it was quite normal and quite solid, and it had never gone from our vision. But this experiment alone, and one of the scientists actually had his chin on the bowl just to make sure nobody sort of got involved in it at all. This was the one thing that convinced them through all the experiments that it was totally genuine.
Have the spirit team ever gone into any great description of what the existence is like after death?
We have. They've spoken about that to a certain extent with us. But it's all been very general stuff. And where we were hoping to get more, sort of better information and more detailed information from them, of course, the experiment stopped quite suddenly at the end. And it was quite traumatic that happened exactly 20 years ago. So we weren't able to get the amount of information that we'd hoped to get. But we're told that now, in the very near future, when we have the voice again, which we are working on, that we will get more and more of this information to allow other people to understand it.
And when you say it stopped quite suddenly, how was that? Was it you sat there one night and just nothing happened?
No, it was over a period of about, I think, six sittings, when we totally lost track of our spirit team, and we weren't able to connect with them more. And the reason for that was that we had sort of four crystals in the room on the table in north, south, east and west directions. And they'd been used for the work. But 6 weeks before the end, these crystals started to give off a dreadful sort of sound, which was like a sort of, not a hum, but a whine that was very loud and actually didn't allow me to trance any. And gradually we were told by the spirit team, well, not by the spirit team, we had one person from the spirit world who we think was probably a lord of the cosmos, who contacted us over the last four sittings and explained that we would not be able to have any more sittings where we could connect with our own spirit team. And the reason for this was that there were a group of people in the future who were a group like us, a research group, sitting in a similar way to us, but they were using a crystal probe, which unfortunately was reacting every time we sat with the crystals in our room, which gave off this horrible sound, which, you know, sort of was nobody could sort of really sort of settle down within it. And eventually this one guy told us we're having to close it down altogether. We had, all of his speeches are within my book, Witnessing the Impossible. Every single sitting of the Skoll experiment is documented in that one book, that's available now. Our friend Brian Russell in the UK actually distributes it. You were able to get it through a website up until about 3 or 4 weeks ago, when we had this computer go in for a service, and whoever it was supposed to do a few minor additions to the website about the book, etc. Managed to totally wreck the website, so I've got to have another one built now so that I can sort of get back to selling the books. But Brian has got plenty of books there, and all of those last conversations with the guy who called himself Varun Herrick, we were able to catch his image and outline of him on the video camera. We could hear him speaking through the TDC machine, he explained exactly why we weren't going to be able to do any more. But the time wasn't right for 20 years, and now the time's right again for us to get the phenomena back.
And when you describe him as some kind of lord of the cosmos, what do you mean by that?
Well, basically, I think there's a hierarchy within the spirit world. Some beings in the spirit world are more advanced and more learned than others. And they tend to sort of, move upwards, if you like, in the pecking order as it happens. For instance, we had a spirit team who were very, very wise, really great people and used to work with us. But the spirit team had a council of communion up in the spirit world who they had to answer to. So the council of communion were like a board, if you like, that passed down to the managers what had to be done, etc. And it was the managers within the spirit team that were actually reacting with us. But then the higher ones, the council of communions, were the ones who decided what the experiments were going to be that our spirit team did, and what they wanted them to sort of to do from there on. But beyond the Council of Communion, there are some very, very advanced beings. And we think that these people are possibly lords of the cosmos. So they're not actually tied to the Earth or to any other area, but they operate within the cosmos. And they're in charge of various other of these councils, etc.
As time has gone on and you've been investigating these things, all investigating physical mediumship, and then ETs starting to appear, and then you have Lord of the Cosmos. Did you feel, as time went on, that you were getting, I don't know, a bit flummoxed and thinking, this is getting a lot stranger than I thought it was going to be?
No, not really. The progression was always natural. So it didn't really worry us, but we understood in the end that nobody from the spirit world was able to communicate with us at the very end. But people from other dimensions were. So it was down to this guy, Varun Heerick, who thanked us for the work that we'd done and explained why we really weren't able to sort of go any further with it, to sort of do the closing down of the group. But our own spirit team are still around. They're not actually calling themselves by the same early now, but the same spirit people are there and working with us.
And did the spirit team ever discuss the Earth's religions?
They were very reluctant to do so because I think they felt that there was no necessity for actual religions. What they referred to more than anything was spiritual science, which is the natural science of life and the afterlife. And it was a scientific aspect they were more interested in, as we are now.
Was there ever any discussion about reincarnation?
Yes, there was, and we were told that was a choice.
So that we would come back?
We could choose to reincarnate or not. And many of us, including us, I think, have actually had several reincarnations. I mean, you sort of work with regression, so you'd probably understand that better than we do.
Yeah, I was wondering what, if the spirit team had given any detail on reincarnation, because it's always interesting, particularly for me, to see what might come up in those sort of circumstances.
That's right, yeah. But they did discuss it, and as I said, it was a choice for each individual as to whether they reincarnated or not.
So can you tell us about the group that you have now and how you're trying to build it up?
Yeah, when we came out to Spain 12 years ago, you probably understand that, we're a bit cheesed off because we hadn't been able to recreate anything at Skull. We did try. We lived in Skull till 2006. That was 8 years after the experiment had finished. But our original mediums aren't interested in doing anything similar again. And we had tried with various other sitters to try and get phenomena back. But absolutely nothing. Eventually, Spirit led us to move to Spain. We were sort of getting messages all the time about moving to Spain and about areas where they wanted us to live initially. And we came out in 2006. And ever since then, we've been trying to build a circle up together. Sandra and I have sat together on a regular basis. We didn't really develop anything worthwhile up until about a year ago, because we've had different sitters who really didn't fit in. And we've had sitters that looked okay in the beginning, but then turned out not to be. You people might be great people, but if you haven't got the harmony within a circle, then you're not really going to get anywhere with it. And it was only about a year ago that we got together with a couple of sitters, who we're now sitting with, with those sitters, very, very quickly, we started to get spirit lights, and we've been getting these spectacular spirit lights now for about a year, we're now getting touched by various spirit people around the group, and obviously they are working, they've been telling us they're working on teleportation again. For many, many years, really for 40 years, they've actually teleported live animals in the light from our home. When we lived in the UK, before we moved to Skull, we lived in Harrow Wood in Essex. And to begin with, they did this 40 years ago with a hamster. It was one of our daughters had the school hamster. After a sitting, we were starting to get some good results at those sittings. But after a sitting, those of us from the group came down to have a cup of coffee. We noticed that the cage in which the hamster usually was sitting on a surface in the kitchen. It was still locked, but the hamster was missing. So all of us from the circle were down in the room, you know, sort of looking under absolutely everything to see where the hamster had gone. But in fact, we didn't find him. It was about an hour or so later, after the others had gone home, that he appeared again on the surface where his cage was, out of his cage, but the cage was still locked. And we didn't really think much of it, but we unlocked the cage, put him back in, and he was fine. Then the next time this happened, the cage was empty after we'd had a sitting. And Sandra was getting a bit fed up with this because she realised, you know, the daughter would get quite upset if the school hamster wasn't available to take back to school. So she went into the kitchen where the cage was and said, "Come on, Spirit, if you've got the hamster, bring him back." And a moment later, a very bright light appeared on the kitchen surface that was vibrating at a ridiculously high level. And as the vibration sort of slowed down, gradually into view, came the outline of a hamster, and then gradually more and more until he was totally solid. So she was actually able to witness this process, and it's gone on with our dogs and cats ever since. We've had them teleported through walls, through doors, and we now have a family of seven cats, and it's happened frequently here with the cats being teleported in and out of the property. In fact, a few weeks ago, we had one of them we thought had died because he went missing for such a long time. And then one afternoon, he was just there in the room. Sandra was convinced that he died and he was just showing us himself. And then right in front of our eyes, again, he just vanished in the full light and everything. So she was quite convinced that he died. And this happened five times over a two or three. And finally, on the last time, he remained there. So they'd been practicing with him, sort of teleporting him in and out of the apartment. So we've had that happen an awful lot of times. So this is the way that they assure us now, that they bring the spiritual essence of the spirit people into the room we're in.
And do you think they'll ever try and teleport human?
Yes, we've been told this is going to happen. So I just don't know how that's going to work out.
Are you volunteering?
I don't mind. I mean, I've been a volunteer right through a lot of these experiments. In Skull, they developed the little spirit lights that we had at Skull so that they were actually healing devices. And they were about the size of, a 1p piece. These used to fly around the room and very bright lights. And on occasion, they would actually go into your body. And when they first started doing this, they used me as a guinea pig. So this light would go straight into my, we could see this all the time, went straight into my chest. And you could feel it moving around your body. It was feeling was not, there's no pain or anything. Feeling was a little bit like a butterfly going around your body and just fluttering. And you felt this all over your body and then stay there for 2 or 3 minutes. And then it'd pop out of your arm or something. And then when we went to do some demonstrations in California, in the USA, we did some sittings, and people there were actually quite ill that came on occasions. There's one lady there that for years, both her knees were absolutely shot. She had dreadful pain in both knees, I think arthritic, really. And on the first time that she came to sit with us there in Los Angeles, this little light blew into her knee, after that, when she went home, she had absolutely no more pain in that knee and still doesn't today, so much so that she actually came back a week later and had another sitting with us, and the little light blew into her other knee, and that lady still out in California, you know, sort of more than 20 years later, he's totally free of pain. So it was working in that. And there was an occasion, I remember, when the light went into a guy who just had a heart attack. And we didn't know that when he first sat with us. But Spirit explained that he had and said he needed healing. And that guy has gone on and his heart's absolutely solid now. You know, it's that was all developed for the good of mankind.
Now, with the Spiritual Science Foundation, can anybody join it?
Anybody can join. All we ask is that they pay €20 a year. And for that, they will be able to visit the centre when we get it open in Antequera, we hope this next year, and witness phenomena there. Also, they have access to me if they want any information or advice about their own home circles, about physical mediumship in any form, then I'm happy to sort of give them free information on that, provided they belong to the foundation.
Well, that's fantastic. Can you give us your book again, please?
The book is called Witnessing the Impossible.
And is that on Amazon, or do we have to go through that website?
No, you can't. You'd have to go through through Brian Russell at the moment on that one, and I don't have his address to hand. But there is going to be, I've lost the website where people were able to buy that, but I'll have another one up in about a month's time. But that book is the only book in the world, a record of every single sitting that we did at Skoll.
Fantastic.
The other book that I've written is called In Pursuit of Physical Mediumship. That is available from Amazon. You can get it from Amazon or from the publisher, who is Janus Publishing.
Robin, thank you very much for being a guest and coming onto the podcast. It's been a really fascinating conversation.
You're very welcome.
And that was an interview with Robin Foy. And my book, which is titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon. And you can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you'll get access to the extended episodes. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. I have a new website. It is simonbound.com. That's Bown, not Brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website. And you can go to that website for past life regression, as well as info on my books and podcasts. And if you enjoy this episode, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.